Little Foxes by Michael Mopurgo, Chapter 14. For some days after that, Billy would neither speak nor eat. He sat in the bows of the barge, his grey feather in his hand, his eyes scoured the countryside round about for the fox. Joe left him alone with himself. He knew there was nothing he could say that would not sound trite, and so he preferred to say nothing until the wound had begun to heal, as he knew it would. Billy was sitting out on deck that last night on the barge, trying to drag his soul out of the darkness, and he knew Joe was not to blame, that he ought to speak to him, that the right thing had been done, that he could not bring himself to say anything. When Joe came and sat beside him, puffing on his pipe, Billy looked away. "Billy, old son," he said, "only last year something happened to me that made me feel just like you feel now. It made me feel that life was unfair and cruel, and that the world was a terrible place where I did not belong. There were black days, Billy, but I had a friend, a dear friend. A friend who made me see that it was worth going on, that the swans still needed to be cared for, that life had to be lived. You have to look at it this way, Billy, old son. That fox is out there right now where he should be, and he's there because you kept him alive against all the odds. That's your reward, Billy, old son." And when Joe put his arm around Billy's shoulder, Billy could cry as he had needed to all that time, all those 10 long years. The next day, they were cruising down a broad stretch of river, passing an island that was white with swans. They were travelling faster than usual for some reason, engine at full throttle, when suddenly the engine died, leaving them floating silently towards the bank. And as the barge slowed, pushing into the reeds, Joe shouted to Billy to jump off and tie up. "Sounds bad," he said. "Poor old girl, she's just about due for retirement. Built her myself, Billy, my father and I did. Nearly 40 years old she is. I'll have a look below, see if I can fix her. Tie her up properly, fore and aft, won't you, Billy? Wouldn't want to drift on this stretch with no engine." And he lifted the engine hatch and peered into it, shaking his head. Time after time he tried to start her up, but the engine never even gave so much as a hopeful cough. He rubbed his hands with an oily rag. "It's no good, Billy, old son," he said. "She's had it. Needs help if we're going to get her started again. Still, if we've got to break down somewhere, I suppose this isn't a bad spot to do it. See that house up there across the fields? Must be a telephone in a place like that. Come on." They walked up from the river along an avenue of lime trees that led to an ancient red brick house with gabled roofs and stone mullion windows. There was a huge pond with wonderfully coloured ducks swimming around in it, and the hedges on either side were clipped out like great big birds, pheasants and cockatoos, and there were roses everywhere. "Big, isn't it?" said Billy, "like a palace. Wouldn't want to clean the windows in this place." But Joe said nothing. He seemed suddenly tense, almost excited. They crossed the deep crunchy gravel and walked up the steps to the huge oak front door that was studded with nails. But to Billy's amazement, Joe did not knock on the door at all, but walked straight in. He threw his straw hat onto the chair and, ushering Billy in front of him, marched through the hallway into a huge sitting room where there were paintings as big as the walls in Billy's bedroom back at Auntie May's. There were two people in the room, a smiling policeman with three stripes on his arm, standing with his back to the fireplace, his hands behind his back. And sitting in an armchair beside him was a lady who got up as they came into the room. Billy sensed some kind of trap and backed away, but Joe took his hand gently and led him in. "Well, here he is, dear," said Joe, kissing the lady fondly on both cheeks. "I brought him home just like you wanted me to. This is Billy Bunch. Billy, old son, I want you to meet Molly." "Are you married then?" Billy asked, looking up at Joe, and Joe nodded. "Hello, Billy," she said as she kissed him on both cheeks. The lady did not have to bend down far, for she was short. Her hair, which was greying at the temples, was drawn up behind her in a plait and pinned to the top of her head. She smelt of flowers and wore no makeup, and Billy liked that. "Joe's told me so much about you. I feel I know you quite well already." Billy had 100 questions, but there was no time to ask even one. "And Billy," said Joe, "this is Police Sergeant William Fatsackily. Now he has his own very special reason for wanting to help you, and he has been a great help, Billy. Sorted it all out with the social services people. They know you're here, Billy, you see, old son. I knew who you were that first morning when you came to the barge. Not at first, I didn't. At first, I thought you were someone else. But I'll tell you about that in a minute, Billy. You were in all the papers, Billy, on the radio. Everyone was on the lookout for you. Luckily, Sergeant Fatsackerly here had visited my barge the day before. They knew you were heading in the direction of the river. Asked me to keep a lookout for you. So I was half expecting you to turn up. And when you did, I rang the sergeant from the village that same morning. Told him I'd found you and they could call off the search. And I told him I'd look after you until I got home. After that, I rang Molly here and I told her all about you. And she thought what I thought, that some things are meant to be. She told me to bring you home, so I did, and here we are. You live here, in this place. You don't live on the barge? Billy asked, trying to piece it all together. Joe shook his head and smiled. So you see, I knew all about you, old son, even before you told me yourself. But I was glad you did that, old son, very glad. You don't know about us, though, do you, Billy? Well, maybe it's time I told you. It all happened about a year ago, Billy. It was early springtime, Billy, and we'd found four little cygnets, high and dry, after a flood. No parent bird around. My son, Christopher, he was about your age. He fed them and looked after them for a few weeks. And then, when they were ready to fly, we decided to release them, and we ringed them, as we always do the young ones, and took the barge upstream for a few miles to get them away from the swanery on the island. Didn't want to risk them being attacked by the adult birds. And we were 2 days upriver, weren't we, Molly? And Christopher was releasing them from the bank. I was busy tinkering with the engines. Molly was in the galley. And when I went up on deck later, the four cygnets were swimming away, but there was no sign of Christopher. We don't know how it happened, even now, Billy, but they found him downstream later that day, drowned. And that was the great sadness I told you about on the barge, Billy. It was the same for you when you lost your fox. And soon as I saw you that morning, Billy, soon as I knew it wasn't Christopher walking across the field towards me, I thought to myself that Providence had smiled on us and was giving us back a son. We need you, old son, Molly and me, every bit as much as you need us. We know we get on, don't we? We love the same things. And if you get on with me, you'll get on with Molly. Molly wants to be your mother, Billy, and I want to be your father if you'll have us. Sergeant Fatsackerly looked at the boy. Well, Billy Bunch, he said, can I tell the office you'll be staying here with these good people? For good, Billy asked. Do you mean forever? We mean forever, Billy, said Joe, putting his arm around his wife. And Molly nodded. Forever, Billy, she said. Take it or leave it, son, said Sergeant Fatsackerly. I know what I'd do. I'll take it, said Billy. And he put his hand in his pocket to find his feather, but it was gone. I must have dropped my lucky feather, he said. Won't need it any more, will you, said Joan. Not any more. If any of them had looked out of the window at that moment, they would have seen a solitary swan standing by the duck pond, looking up at the house, and round her left leg she wore a red plastic ring. She waddled towards the pond and settled into the water, frightening the ducks out of the pond. And then she was taking off, her wings beating in the water behind her, her legs paddling the water, lifting her high into the air, down the lime avenue, towards the swanery. All her debts paid, and her mission accomplished at last.